Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners come to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth. With your hosts, financial and wealth building experts, Christian Allen and Rod Zabriskie.
Welcome into today's episode of the Money Insights Podcast. My name's Christian Allen. I'm here with my co-host, Rod the Pod Zabriskie. What's going on, Rodney?
Hey, I am doing great. We're coming up on the close of school. So for our college friends, they're done. Like by the time this airs, they'll be done. Right. I mentioned earlier, I have a son who's graduating. I have another son who's getting close. He'll be graduating in December. And he'll be happy that the finals are over. But then, of course, the younger kids, K-12, a couple weeks left after that.
Okay, that's exciting. So one of my kids doesn't go to school at all. The other one is in high school and only goes there for theater. In fact, she's in Shrek tonight and all of next
week. Oh, very cool.
She's playing the Gingerbread Man. Gingy is the name. Anyway, nice. I don't keep track of that stuff very well. So I'm like, every day just kind of ends up looking the same. My kids are just always around. It's just kind of the way my life goes. So I have no idea when school, I mean, I know if I think about it, I'm like, okay, the end of May, usually when school starts to wind down. Yeah. Okay, but Rod, today we're going to talk about retirement planning. Okay. I know.
Another kind of graduation.
Yes. Oh, good thought. Look at that. Woo. That was an impressive bridge, Rod. Woo. So yes, we are going to talk about another type of graduation. Now I should say this. One, obviously we talk about retirement in different forms all the time. Today we're going to be talking about how to mitigate market risk in retirement. So our title for today's episode is Navigating Retirement Risks, Innovative Strategies for Financial Security. That's what we're going to hit on. We are going to make sure that when you graduate, you know exactly what to do, because there's nothing worse than, think about it, Rod, when you're that 18-year-old, you're graduating high school, you get there and you're like, what the hell do I do now? Yeah. Like, okay, good news is that some people are really well prepared and they've got like their track, right? They know which college they're going. That wasn't me, Rod. That was not me. I mean, I did have some plans in mind, but like I had a gap year where between my plans. And so I was kind of a hot mess. Mm-hmm. We are going to make sure that we navigate those, help people navigate those waters, except in retirement.
Yeah. And the thing that I found with my kids is you tell them, hey, you need to start applying for college. You need to start doing these things. Deadlines are coming. And it just doesn't mean anything to them. Right. However,
are you comparing listeners to your children?
Well, here's what I'm going to say. There's a step.
I don't know if they're going to like that.
There's a quote out there that says, well, okay, well, maybe you'll think different after you hear this, but there's a quote out there that says that there are people that most people spend more time planning their vacations than they do planning their retirement. Okay. Now that's our listeners, most likely. Right. Because they're focused on their financial investing and other things like that. So probably not.
Okay.
However, going back to the kids, in some cases, it just didn't matter how much we said, hey, you got to do this. And there were opportunities missed because of applications for school. And then in one particular case, application for a scholarship. Mm. He knew he qualified. He knew he
procrastinated.
Missed the deadline. It was gone. There was nothing he could do.
Yeah, that's brutal. Well, that was an expensive lesson for you or him or both of you, everybody involved.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to make sure that people don't miss that deadline and they are well prepared for that next chapter in life. Now, can I also just say this, Rod? I think this is important. We don't believe in traditional retirement. And really, we've just basically taken on the attitude about retirement that we have, that we see inside of our listeners and inside of our client base, right? Mm-hmm. The people we talk to are primarily wealth builders. And so wealth building doesn't stop at 65. In fact, it might just be a different phase, right?
For sure.
For some people, it just continues to grow and build. And for a lot of people, that's going to be the case, right? Like wealth building does end up having that, I hate the hockey stick analogy, but it has a hockey stick curve to it in that as you start to create wealth, it suddenly can take that curve and escalate. And oftentimes that happens as we get older. So a lot of our listeners will not be in a situation where they're concerned or worried about retirement income really in any way, shape, or form from a, hey, am I going to have enough standpoint?
Yeah.
It's going to be more about how do I optimize what I'm doing? How do I optimize what I bring in? How do I make it as tax efficient as possible? How do I then also pass as much money on to the next generation as possible? So like, that's the package that's wrapped up in. Okay.
Yeah. I actually have a story.
I love stories. Tell me it.
Because just within the last week, I was talking to one of our clients and he is probably 67, 68. Mm-hmm. And he breaks the news. Hey, I'm selling my practice. So physician, long time practicing. And this is a big deal for him.
Because he's
one of those where he's done a really good job of building wealth, has a lot of different areas where he has built wealth. But he also loves being clinical, being with the patients, you know, that part of it, he just has always loved. So, and he still will be. So he's selling, but staying on board for the carryover for a couple of years. Okay. And so I'm like, okay, great. This is some transition into kind of this phase of what you're describing. But then he says, oh, and did I also tell you that I'm creating a new company and have new partners and doing all this other stuff? It's like, okay,
that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's a good story. And that's like typical, right? We have a lot of people who they might decide, hey, I don't want to have my full-time job anymore. Mm-hmm. I might want a little bit more freedom and flexibility, but in his case, they continue to work and do that. And they're doing other things. Well, that is typical. Having said that, Rod, having said all of that, today is going to be focused on mitigating retirement income risk. And so the people who are probably, I'm saying this, and as I'm saying it, I'm second guessing myself. I was going to say the people who probably get the most value are people who need to create like a more defined income plan. And yet, as I think about it, regardless of what income level, I think there's the philosophy and strategies that we're going to talk about today will be applicable across the board.
Yeah. Well, it's planning and it's contingency planning, right?
Planning.
Plan A, plan B, plan C kind of thing. So plan A, again, in a lot of these cases is they keep investing. They're still rolling money into real estate, businesses, other things like that. The only thing that will stop them at some point is just maybe cognitively not being able to keep up. And then plan B, plan C. So they have to just kind of build these things in because who knows, right? Who knows where will be, what kinds of situations we'll face, and you'll have to pivot.
Well said. Okay. So let's talk about how we pivot. How do we actually make moves that will be advantageous for us today and going forward? The first place to start, Rod, is that we have to understand the risk that we're actually trying to put. Now, again, I don't know if I set the stage here, but it really clearly we're offsetting market risk in retirement. So we're talking about stock market risk, to be really clear. That's it. We're specifically focusing on, and the reason we want to hit on that, it's kind of like a build on from a few episodes ago where we talked about like various different retirement strategies. We got into, you know, which accounts to take from and why, and, you know, the timing of those types of things. But today we're really emphasizing, if I have a lump sum of traditional market money, and most people do, right? Despite the fact that we so frequently talk about the alternative space, most people that we meet with, nearly all of them have some money that's invested in the stock market, whether it's through a qualified plan or somewhere else. It's just almost always there. Okay. Yep. So if that's going to be the case, I want to make sure I know what to do with it. So today we're going to talk about how to offset some of the risk specifically as it relates to that area of our quote unquote retirement planning. Okay. So as far as introducing it, Rod, is there anything that I missed that we need to add to it before we get into some of the actual strategies and philosophy?
This will probably restate a little bit of what you just said, but I think of these things that we're going to talk about as subsets within the the overall plan. Again,
yeah.
Are there listeners who will rely wholly on the stock market? Not after they listen to this, but even if they were planning on it.
Certainly not.
In most cases, it is like, okay, because I have those assets, I am going to create income from other places. But to the extent that I do decide to take income or create that income stream from those market assets, these will be really cool things to just understand how to mitigate the risks that are just inherent with it.
Before we get into our two core strategies, let's make sure we hit on some of the most common techniques that we see out there. I'll just roll through some of what I see. First of all is the common adage of diversification. Mm-hmm. And just general diversification. Obviously, the more places I have, or if I have my money in various baskets, I then suddenly am potentially creating more in some other places, less in some other, but the idea is that they have different levels of risk. I'm therefore spreading out my risk among many different assets. And by doing that, just naturally creating, you know, diversification and therefore risk mitigation. Okay. Yeah. That's the first one. That's the one everyone talks. The next one is asset allocation. And this one, asset allocation, when I think of this, it's like there's a difference, even though it sounds a lot like diversification, right? Mm-hmm. And the difference is that basically what's suggested here is that I keep my asset allocation ongoing. So what happens is I start out with my diversified portfolio, and then as I create returns, I then go back and I rebalance and I keep my asset allocation in line, right?
Yep.
So asset allocation is another one that you constantly hear out there. And again, these are all, if I'm going to be in the market or like if that's the way I'm going to choose to retire, then these are all ways that will at least create some level of risk mitigation. Utilization of bonds, Rod, fixed mm-hmm. income security. So this is one we've talked about on the last pod where basically as I get older, I increase my bond portfolio. Yep. I'm young. I've got time on my hands. I've got the world at my fingertips, Rod. I can be as aggressive as I want. It doesn't even matter. But as I get old, that I don't have that time anymore.
Nope,
so that's the theory. We know how I feel about that. I think it's been debunked. I don't know why it's still out there, but that's still a common mitigation technique that you'll hear from financial advisors.
Yep.
And then there's probably a bunch of different ways you can use bonds. Bond laddering is a mm-hmm. really common typical one where we're basically using bonds to create income by laddering them in different timeframes. And so we create a little bit of diversification just within that bond market, both on the types of bonds and the duration of those bonds.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are the most common things that I hear out there. Did I miss anything that's coming to your mind?
No, that's it.
Okay. 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 Now that we've set the stage, Rod, we are going to bust out today two strategies. Again, we are not the creators of these, but we think that they're powerful strategies that can help people optimize what they're doing for retirement. And then what we're going to do is we're going to bring in. So what I want you to do first, Rod, is describe the covered asset strategy. That's our first strategy in its base form, right? Yeah. And then what we'll do is we'll take that base form, what like the creators meant it to be, and then we'll add our spin, bringing in some of the alternative assets and things like that. Okay. Covered asset strategy, Rod, what is it?
Yeah. So this one I think of is for somebody who doesn't want to be in the market in retirement. They may have been in the market during their working years because a 401k just is, right? They're almost forced to be investing in the stock market. And they may even have had a brokerage account, right? Just because that's what Americans do. But when they get to retirement, they think about the volatility and the issues. And in a lot of cases, it actually pushes people back that they don't retire when they were planning to, because they just can't wrap their mind around taking on that volatility and being worried about running out of money. That's ultimately what it comes down to. So what this one does is it says, okay, great. Well, you have built assets. Let's reposition those assets into a place where you can create guaranteed income that lasts the rest of your life, no matter how long you live. And what we're talking about is an annuity. And there are a lot of different types of annuities. if this is new territory for you, we have a couple of episodes that we did on annuities, so you can kind of get more rounded. But the key here is then what this strategy focuses on is the type of annuity that gives you the highest payout of income is what's called a SPIA, single premium immediate annuity. You take the lump sum of cash, you hand it over to the insurance company. That asset no longer exists. What you've done is you've replaced that asset with a guaranteed stream of income that lasts the rest of your life. And you can set it up for an individual if you're married and you set it up for both. They call it a joint payout for both, so it lasts until the second of you passes away. Again, that's the highest level of income that you can create. And so that's what this one uses. However, the problem with that is that because you've given up the asset in exchange for the stream of income, if you do that and you pass away, the both of you pass away within, say, a couple of years, well, you didn't get nearly the value out of it as what the asset actually represented when you handed it over, right? So that's a few different problems. Number one, nobody feels good about that. But number two, it also feels like you're disinheriting your kids to say, well, I gave up the asset. Sorry, kids. I died two years later. The money's gone, and you don't get anything, right? So what we do is in conjunction with the annuity, we also have life insurance. And in this case, usually it's just a purely death benefit, permanent death benefit type of plan, so that no matter when you die, there's this lump sum that pays out, and that's the name, covers the asset that you gave up when you purchased the annuity.
Okay, perfect. So simply put, we've turned our assets into an income, and now we need to replace those assets. Life insurance income's into that. Okay, so that's the covered asset strategy, and we're going to come back to that here in just a minute. Okay, the second one we're talking about probably has more application. It's not as it's more nuanced, right? Yeah. But the second one is what they call the volatility buffer strategy. Rod, talk to us about what the volatility buffer strategy is, then we'll come back and get into the details.
Okay, perfect. So if you were hearing me describe the first one, the covered asset, and you're like, those are crazy people, why would you ever not want to be in the market and take advantage of the growth opportunity? And
well, or Rod, you might have heard that and been like, I'm not giving up my assets. Like, yeah. I'm not giving up, like, that's crazy, right? I've worked all my life to build all this money, and I'm just going to hand it over for an income stream, not knowing what the future holds. Like, that's crazy talk.
Yep.
It might be, right?
Yeah. And so that's where the volatility buffer comes in, because this one is very much for people who want to be using the stock market to hold their investments, to continue to grow, and then you turn it into income. And again, in some form, right? It may not be 100% of your income. In most cases, it probably isn't. But if you're wanting to do that in some form, then the next question is, what's a reasonable amount to take? Right. And we've talked about this a lot. There's the 4% rule that became the 3% or less or whatever. And that's a huge problem, right? Because again, let's just use really round numbers. Let's say that chunk that I'm going to use to create income, let's say it's $1 million. And my broker is telling me that I can create $30,000 a year, 3%, safely. Safely meaning that it statistically is most likely to last the rest of your life, no matter how long you live. You're not going to run out of that money before you die. So that's the 3%. So, but that's a problem too, right? Because those people were saying, well, Rod, you're crazy because I don't want to give up the asset, or I want to stay in the market because it has this extra growth potential. But guess what? The people who chose that guaranteed annuity, as of right now, or as we're recording this, they're getting like a 7.5% payout, right? Well, why would I not take the 7.5? Why do I take 3 over here if I'm choosing the market because I just think it's going to do a lot more for me? Or maybe even a more appropriate question, why is it 3? Like, why can't I take more? Market on average is going to beat the 7.5. So why can't I just take that?
You could. That's a viable option, right? You just statistically are more likely to lose your parachute.
Yeah. And that's it. The problem is when the market is down, it's losing value, you still need to take your income. And so you lost, you know, whatever, like 2 years ago, people lost 20%, 30% in the market. And if you, in addition to that, took your income, then it's harder for you to make that up. And so you get a few years in a row where that's happening, and all of a sudden you get to a place where you can't make up for your what you're losing with the growth that's there, right? So
yeah.
So what this does is it says, okay, we recognize that that's a problem. And so what we're going to do is, in addition to the money that we keep in the market, we're going to carve a piece of that off and put it into what they call a non-correlated asset. All that means is it doesn't have the same volatility. You don't have to worry about the ups and downs with these dollars. So then what happens is in that year where the market lost 20 or 30%, you're not taking money out of the market-based asset because you need to leave as much as you can there to recover, right? The market's going to recover. You want to be able to recover with it. So instead, you take income from this non-correlated asset in those years where the market was down.
Okay, so we have two strategies: covered asset strategy, annuity for our income. Life insurance covers the asset that we would have lost. Okay, the second strategy, now we've talked about volatility buffer, just means now I have to have some type of non-correlated asset to the market. And again, we're talking about the market here, so non-correlated to traditional stocks. And by doing that, I can create a buffer of volatility if I have another place to take income from. Okay, so I think the question is, let me just say this. Most of our clients, most of the people listening to this, don't fit into the traditional world where they're looking at it and thinking, okay, I've just got a pot of qualified money, mm-hmm. and now I've got to figure out what to do with it. Or even a situation where it's like, okay, I've been good at saving inside my qualified accounts, but I've also been good at saving. And so I've got a regular brokerage account and my assets basically look like, you know, 50% in the, specifically retirement assets might look like 50% in qualified plans and 50% in non-qualified plans. Well, it's normally not going to be all sitting there in the market.
Right.
So the question then, Rod, is how do these types of strategies actually apply to the people listening to this, people who are utilizing other assets in various ways?
Yeah. Here's what I would say on that to the extent that you like, well, let's start with the covered asset strategy, like the idea of having some guaranteed income, right? We often talk about this in terms of, it may not be all of the income that you need, right? If you need whatever, $400,000 a year of income to cover your base expenses and your standard of living, travel, whatever, however you envision this period of your life being, we're not necessarily saying you have to have all of that covered with this guaranteed annuity, right? If you said of that 400, 100 is my just base core needs, and you say, well, maybe I'll cover that with the guaranteed annuity, and then the other lifestyle type of stuff is covered by these other things that I have going on out there as well.
So right? The baseline strategy is basically suggesting, hey, I'm going to take all my assets, turn it into an income stream and cover. But again, like that's not very practical.
Right.
And it just wouldn't make sense in, you know, 9 times out of 10 to do something like that.
Yep.
So what you're really doing is like a mini covered asset strategy where I'm taking a chunk of my assets and I'm utilizing this strategy with just a small portion of it. The other thing that you could do, Rod, is I think you could more or less replace your market-based assets with other type of assets. I'm trying to think about how that works inside the real estate space, but I feel like there's a mixture between utilizing the combination of real estate for income, you've still got your market assets, and that could then be another income source. And then you, so like there's, yeah, there's variations that I think work together. And so for each person, it's a matter of kind of putting together the puzzle pieces. But again, the idea here is conceptually, philosophically, I'm changing a mindset here to using the money rather than not, because that's typically the way people think about retirement. Mm-hmm. When they go there, in fact, I hear this every time people say, I just want to live off the interest of my accounts. And while that, it, like philosophically, I get it, right? I don't want to spend down any money, because that's not, you don't want to be going down, you want to go up.
Yep.
If I go down, I have a chance of running out, right?
Yep.
So this strategy does have a lot of benefits in that I create a guaranteed level of like income. First of all, I get some tax benefits from doing it, especially depending on kind of the mixture. There could be some important tax benefits that go with that. And then I'm also still replacing the asset. And now I have liquidity because I have a tax-free death benefit coming to my family. So again, like the philosophy around it is actually very sound. It's just more about finding what the right mixture of those things ends up being for you and your situation. But I do think, to your point, there's validity in having some form of annuity as kind of a baseline.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I should say this. We were talking before we got on, and I personally wouldn't use an annuity, right? I would purchase real estate instead of an annuity, mm-hmm, 9 times out of 10. I mean, as I say that, I tend to be a little bit more aggressive. So if I was an ultra conservative person, then maybe that would be a portion that would make sense. For me, I think I like the idea of purchasing cash flowing real estate that gives me probably a pretty similar payout, maybe even a better payout. It does have more risk. Let's be really clear about that, right? Like, mm-hmm, there is a difference between buying a guaranteed income annuity that just has like, you know, really there's no chance or little to no chance of it not paying out, right? The world would have to kind of blow up, yeah, in order for one of these major life insurance companies not to be able to pay out their core benefits. So,
yeah,
so anyway, it's a little bit different, but again, I think the philosophy around it is sound and it can create some interesting ways of putting your retirement income together and, yeah, mitigating risk at the same time.
Yeah. So I have a couple of thoughts on that. The first one is that we often talk in terms of buckets, right? So this represents one bucket among many. And we also often talk about this idea of replacing our working income with passive income. And we're not usually talking about annuities in that context, right? We are talking about real estate or other ways of creating passive income. And so in this case, what you'd be doing is allocating some dollars. And remember, we talked earlier about plan A, plan B, plan C. Well, for probably most people, this would probably be like a plan C. In other words, they're not necessarily choosing that now, right? But they might have some dollars that they have allocated somewhere, it's doing something for them, but then those dollars could be moved over into a place where it creates this. I said 7.5%. That would be for like a 60-year-old. If you're 70, 75, 80, by the time you move that over, you can get a lot larger payout as a percentage of what you move over. So, so it obviously can be in the back of your mind as part of the plan. Doesn't necessarily have to be one of those critical, you know, initial pieces.
Yeah. And again, a lot of this has to do with your level of risk tolerance. And
yep,
I think that that's different depending on, you know, what stage of life you're in. And so I hesitate to say, hey, because I feel this way personally today, that somebody should do that exactly. And I do think it's responsible to have annuities as part of this conversation, just because there's been a lot of really thoughtful, smart retirement planning experts who would suggest that some combination, and I should be really clear, when you're talking about that traditional retirement planning world, they would suggest that the combination of using life insurance annuities and typical market, and the market are likely to be your optimal kind of combination, but all three of them genuinely have a place. Okay. I don't want to talk about annuities. Annuities bore me to death. Like, there's nothing I dislike. No, I'm just kidding. There's other things I dislike a little bit more, like taxes. I don't like talking about taxes, Rod. Unless it's talking about how to eliminate them.
Yeah.
So, but even then, man, just the word. I'm off on a tangent. Okay, Rod, volatility buffer. Let's get back on track here. So now we've got to talk about, I think the volatility buffer is a more realistic, practical strategy for most people to like genuinely consider. Now, again, we would say life insurance is a valuable asset in any way. And so like, it's kind of funny because life insurance covers any asset, right? It can cover your entire estate, in fact. So like, it has that value. It creates that value regardless. We're going to set that aside. In the volatility buffer, what they normally suggest is using life insurance cash values as your buffer for volatility, right? Because I know that it's safe, and specifically they like whole life insurance. Why? Because it literally has no correlation to the market. Whereas if I'm in like an index universal life contract, well, I have, while I don't have the downside risk that's involved with it, I also have like a correlation to the market in some way, shape, or form, right? The performance of my IUL is going to be driven by something, by the things that are happening inside the market. So if I truly want to be non-correlated, I've got to use whole life insurance. Okay, here's my take on this. And you could use an annuity too. Again, non-correlated. Sure. But I like the idea of using life insurance because of its tax benefits and all the things that we talk about, right? And cash flowing real estate. Those are like the two things that I would use or would be thinking about primarily as my buffers for volatility. So now this looks like more like a typical client that we would see, right? I'm a physician, I'm a lawyer, I'm a high income earner that's been putting money into my qualified. And I say that just because most of them have great matches, or oftentimes it's just like, because it's like a defined benefit plan, they may not even be contributing their own money. So for a lot of reasons, people tend to build up money in various places. But what I would do is I would most certainly be looking at the real estate and life insurance because of course they're non-correlated, but they're also highly tax efficient. So now what you're doing is you're not just mitigating this, you're not just mitigating risk, you're also dramatically improving the optimization of how you're bringing money, right? So now you've mitigated risk, but you've also maximized or optimized taxes. Whew. Okay, Rod, is that it? Are we done?
Well, so here are a couple of thoughts on that. Do you remember we talked about earlier about this whole preparation thing? I gave the example of my son with applying for college.
Like a scout should be prepared. Is that what you
mean? Yes. And the good news is that a lot of people who are listening to this already have the life insurance in place. Because using it for the investment optimizer or even the capital avalanche, right? Obviously that is very much geared toward creating that income in retirement. So,
and another viable option.
Absolutely. And if you're listening to this, and you're thinking to yourself, oh man, these are all sounding pretty complicated. But then you just remembered, but I already have life insurance, right? I already have the whole life policy that I'm using for investing primarily right now. But we often talk about it in terms of phase two, right? Phase one is investing, borrowing against the policy to go out and invest and create really cool returns. And then phase two is when
A really cool return? I need an example because you talk about cool things and cool returns. Well, I need to know what these cool things and cool returns are.
Yeah, I leave it purposefully vague because the definition depends on the person. But what do know is that a lot of our clients are out creating, 15, 20, 30 plus percent returns in the things they're investing in.
And so I guess I would say
those are all pretty cool. Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. Okay. Thanks for clarifying that.
Yep. So, but then when they're ready to slow down on those things or maybe just live off of the income that they've created that they're not worried about continuing to build necessarily, then phase two and the policy kicks in and that can become part of the income and, or not necessarily the core income, but the buffer income.
You know what we're telling people, Rod? We're telling, if you're listening to us and you already are a client, have a policy, you are in prime position already to activate the volatility buffer in some way, shape, or form. In fact, you're probably just going to do it regardless. Now, the question is, am I going to be really deliberate and say like, okay, as I get into that phase, am I going, because the volatility buffer is like, I want to have at least 3 years. I don't know the number that they suggest. 3 to 5 years of buffer, meaning 3 to 5 years of income that I can take from this other asset without having, because if the market's down, I need to give that time to recover, right? Yeah. And the longer I can give that, the better off I'll be, theoretically. So I then am going over here.
Yeah.
I forgot where my point was going with that, Rod. Do you remember?
Well, the people already are, they're already
there. They're already set up to do it. So yes. Okay. Thank you for that. And really, from a retirement income perspective, we didn't touch on the capital avalanche, but it certainly fits into the, I just genuinely believe it's the most effective retirement income planning tool for income earners that I'm aware of. So certainly that can be and should be a piece of retirement income planning.
One of those buckets.
One of the buckets. Yep. You've got your real estate, or it could be other. Now, we use real estate, but I also should just say, like, there's a lot of ways to invest in the alternative space that aren't real estate.
Yeah.
That's just far and away the most common one. Yep. So I don't want to isolate and say, like, okay, the only way this works is with real estate. Although I will say this. The fact that you own an underlying asset and there's so many tax benefits that go with real estate, that's kind of what leads us to, you know, so commonly suggest that, hey, real estate's the way to go here. Okay, I've gone all over the place, Rod. Is there anything else we want to touch on as it relates to the volatility buffer strategy?
No, I think we've covered it.
Okay, let's wrap this up really quick. So, quick overview. We talked about some of the typical planning methods, and I probably should just say the reason we brought those up is because, not that they're totally ineffective, they're just like cookie cutter, right? It's just what we've been told, what gets said in the media, and maybe it's just because people haven't had any better ideas. I don't know, but regardless, I want to make sure that we throw those out, that we threw those out there. So those are the typical things. I wouldn't take those to the bank. So then what we've gotten into is our two core strategies. And I also just want to emphasize that the people listening here are almost certainly going to be some nuanced version of those, rather than fitting into one or the other or fitting into it in its purest form, right?
Yep.
So it's really more of a philosophy and a way to think about it. We liked the term bucketology. Right. We used to do, when we were doing a lot more of the retirement planning stuff, we'd use to, but that can be a really great way to think about it. If the more buckets I have, and especially if I have buckets that have really valuable characteristics, let's call them characteristics, right? So life insurance is a great example. We often talk about all of the benefits that come with that. We talk about all the benefits that come with real estate. That's what's going to help me get the furthest ahead. And that's, I think, what our advice would be as it relates to mitigating retirement income risks.
Specifically to the market.
Thank you. Okay, this has been fun. Rod, thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights Podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, please visit moneyinsights.net. The views and opinions expressed on the Money Insights podcast are not intended to be individual financial, tax, or legal advice. Always consult with the appropriate advisor before making financial decisions. And if you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This will help others find the show and learn wealth building strategies for themselves. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.